5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Wendy Bell. Inspiring solutions to save America. One show at a time. Are you ready to get on board?
When are you guys gonna learn? The more you indict, the more we unite. Facts. It's Trump 2024. We don't care. You heard me? We already made our mind up. You already know when the hood got your back. Man, they deep in the hood, gangsters, hollering about Trump 2024. You heard me? Woo, woo. Wah. Gangsters. The hood got this man back. I'm just trying to tell you. You heard me? And we ain't stupid, man. American people, man. We ain't all them talking about lockdowns and back wearing the mask and all that. You know, they got a new virus coming and it's going to be, man, nobody don't care. Ain't fooling nobody no more with none of that. You know, new jack. Man, nobody being fooled no more. We all the way up. You heard me? It's Trump 2024. That's what it's going to be because we ain't having nothing else.
From sea to shining sea, 3 hours of bold truth and excellence. The Wendy Bell Radio Program.
Welcome back. Hour number 3 of the Wendy Bell Radio Program. And I've got to say this to you guys, because I'm very grateful on this day. I had a great text yesterday with podcast producer Bob Sloan. He puts the Wendy Bell Radio podcast up online every single day. And he sent me the nicest message. He said, you know what? The first 3 months of 2024 have been off the charts for the podcast. And that's because of you guys. So we are walking ever closer to 2.5 million individuals out there taking the time to download our podcast onto their device to hear it later. Thank you, Wendy Bell Radio, wherever you get your favorite listening material. We appreciate you so much. So I find it very gratifying because I was asleep for so long. And I think I've been sort of like in REM sleep, where I'm walking through my life, by and large, for the majority of my adult years. And I see what's going on, but I'm in deep slumber. I'm busy. I'm raising a family. I'm trying to work and juggle having a nanny to help me when I'm not there and run around and make ends meet and try to guide my sons and be a good wife and all of that. And it's hard. And then I started to wake up in 2016. I woke up during Barack Obama, for sure. But watching Hillary Clinton, watching the DNC, watching the machine, and then walking through Donald Trump's presidency and the negativity and the garbage, and then COVID, and then 2020. I mean, if you don't have, you know, in a Looney Tunes commercial, somebody with the skillet and the thing on it, banging it, waking you up. I don't know what's it going to take for everybody to wake up, but it's happening and it's wild. And to hear now in maybe not mainstream circles, but I consider Newsmax and OAN and Real America's Voice and the programs that we watch on Rumble, all of these voices speaking about these things, it's happening. This idea of this blackmail bribery apparatus that is the swamp. We heard Stuart Rhodes from prison talk about this, right? That the secrets are the swamp water and everybody's got something, someone to whom they are beholden. It is the shtick. And Matt Gaetz on with this gentleman named Dan Ball. He's on OAN. They're having this conversation on his show, Real America. And the host here, Dan Ball, says, you know, you're the guy who basically pushed Kevin McCarthy out. You are the one who said, hey, 15 times for you to promise the things before we give you the votes to get the gavel. And then Kevin McCarthy, predictably rhino-y, crabbed the bed and was removed. what about this, sir? Are you going to do this? Are you going to make a call to vacate the chair for Mike Johnson? I want you to hear the give and go. Fascinating. Go.
The fundamental difference is the size of the majority. When I filed the motion to vacate against Kevin McCarthy, we had a four-seat majority, and I came on this program, I answered your tough questions about that, and I promised the American people that the consequence of my action would not be a Democrat Speaker of the House. I had carefully monitored this, I had talked to each and every member, and I didn't think that would be the case. As I sit here with you today, I could not make the same promise, and thus I cannot support a motion to vacate. I can think of two or three members of our House majority, some of whom used to be Democrats, who might actually be willing to take a position for themselves in exchange for voting for Hakeem Jeffries for House Speaker. That risk would put on the table another version of Biden's massive spend. I mean, you thought this minibus was bad, and it was, and I voted no. They'll do another American Rescue Plan that will actually need a rescue from.
Isn't that wild? When I was doing this with McCarthy, I said we're not going to lose the majority. But now the machine has picked off the Mike Gallaghers and the Ken Bucks. And they can claim it's whatever it is. You know, Ken Buck can clutch his pearls and say, I just can't get behind this whole thing with the 2020 election, that it was safe and secure. And that this whole thing, it's just, I can't deal with it anymore. No, you've been promised a cushy job at CNN. And somebody's got some crap on you, even though you're one of the most conservative voting members of Congress. You've been promised something, and there's some crap on you, yo, and we know they're peeling you off for this. Matt Gaetz says, I can't fiddle with the House Speaker because we are razor thin, and there are members within our conference who would vote for Hakeem Jeffries because the pot has been sweetened, or the bribery apparatus is such that they feel threatened. And it goes on. Audio soundbite number two. Wait a minute. I thought we were supposed to, before this omnibus and the minibus and all of this crap that costs us and bankrupts my children and your children and grandchildren, I thought we were supposed to have this whole, you know, 72 hours thing. So the members of the party, everybody can look at what's in these bills. What happened to that, sir? Listen.
It's disappointing that we have gotten rid of the 72-hour rule to read bills. But you know why we got rid of it, Dan? Because the members wanted to waive it. Like, I put it in the rule book, but members wanted to waive that rule because the people who voted for that trash piece of legislation didn't want the details out to the American people. They didn't want you to know that there was millions of dollars, $15 million that the American taxpayer paid to fund Egyptian students going to college in Egypt. They didn't want you to know that they're funded all these NGOs
that
are seducing the invasion.
Because like I said, I remember you putting that in as one of the
rules. Oh, it's on the books, but any given day in the House of Representatives, if 2/3 of the members stand up and say, we hereby waive the rules, then it's like martial law. They automatically go away. And 2/3 of the overall membership didn't want 72 hours to read the bill because they didn't want the American people to read the bill. Because it wasn't about what the ultimate consequence was for the country. If people got their little pork barrel projects in, if they got their funding in for their community centers or their unique agenda items, then they would forsake the broader consequences that we must all endure.
So House Republicans voting 2/3 with Democrats, we don't need 72 hours. Say what? Now, the host is going to ask this question, which is the pressing question everybody wants to know. What do we do? What's the solution? What's the great replacement for these people who clearly on the Republican side need to be primaried out? What do we do, sir?
We cannot fix the country with the people we currently have in Washington.
No kidding.
Republican or Democrat. And the reason I'm here in California is I've been traveling all over this country, from Virginia to Utah, out here to California, to try to raise an army of patriots who actually want to go and serve the people. Not the donors, not the foreign interests abroad, but the people of their district and of this country. And if we don't do that, if we don't defeat some incumbents in primaries, if we don't fill these open seats that have been created because folks have we've gotten rid of the cushy life in Washington, then we will miss the opportunity to seize the Trump presidency. President Trump is going to lay out a vision, and he's going to have a lot of energy behind that vision, but we can't have the Mitch McConnells and the Paul Ryans
tripping. We need a Senate and a House that are America first.
America first, and Donald Trump is laying the seeds. He's scattering the feed on the ground, pointing you in the direction of who these people he believes are. And then he uses people like Matt Gaetz to go out and help seal the deal. Finally, and this is fascinating, calling out the blackmail apparatus in Washington, D.C. Listen.
Let me be clear. There is an organized effort by the political left right now to buy people off to quit and then also to try to compromise people. I know of circumstances right now where people are being told you should quit or else some embarrassing information might come out. We might lie about you and say things that are false. They're actually trying to steal the majority that the people gave to the Republican Party and convert it to the Democratic Party. And they should not have enablers and co-conspirators in our movement willing to facilitate that. I think, you know, that we've got to be real resilient about that. And we should judge harshly those who leave service to go get some high-paying job, if that in fact turns out to be the case. We all knew what these jobs were. It's not like it's a surprise that when you run, it's a two-year job. And if you sign up for the military and you walk off, that's AWOL. I guess only the Secretary of Defense can get away with that.
He just said it. It's exactly what it is. We're dealing with a bunch of grown-ups who are acting like prepubescent school kids on the freaking playground. And our country is being flushed down the toilet as they do. Oh boy, the boomerang. In today's you can't make this crap up category, we're going to take you to a school where a trans athlete, has stepped in it. You're going to like the details next on the Wendy Bell Radio Network. If there is good news in us being able to see some of these changes, the same way Rich Barris from Big Data Polling was telling us he's seeing some big things going on in the Hispanic voting community, a group of people who haven't been really big voters, but I'm going to go with the revolving door of the illegal immigration and the great replacement theory. That's not going on. It's contours what's going on. And they see it. If you get a turnout of Hispanic voters who, like voters, by the way, are inherently conservative, their values, how they feel about family, about work, about rights, about freedom, about religion, about all of it. Very conservative. Very interesting place to tap into. This idea that crazy has a statute of limitations and that statute is coming up real fast is also encouraging to me. This is one of those stories that you're like, really? That we even had to talk about this because nobody was an adult and said, sit down. It's a stupid idea. Well, New York Post headline, bearded trans athlete who injured rival was suspended from rowing team for ogling topless girl in changing room. Who could have seen this coming? Who could have seen this coming? It's like the guy who claimed he was trans so he could get transferred from a male penitentiary to a woman's facility, right? Didn't he end up castrating himself, Brock, and now the DOJ is suing the prison?
That's correct. But how's this any different than the guy that went trans to join a sorority and then in the house walked around and
aroused.
Was aroused.
Aroused. It's almost like we couldn't see this coming. Right? Don't you just want to throat punch people? I know. I did too. Here we go. A bearded, it's just so preposterous. The image is all you need. A bearded transgender basketball player attending a Massachusetts sucks, private school who was seen in a viral video knocking down a rival during a game was allegedly suspended from a female rowing team for staring at a topless girl in a changing room, according to a report. These tranny guys who really aren't, they're just getting their rocks off. They're using this system. They're using progressivism as the bread that's soaking up their gravy, living their best life. I can peer around a bunch of naked chicks. Are you kidding? Let's go. The same 6-foot-tall student athlete enrolled at Kipp Academy in Lynn, Massachusetts, participated in six different female sports, including rowing, volleyball, and taekwondo. reported the Australian magazine Quillette. The student, who's believed to be 17 or 18, joined a female rowing team. Where is the parent? Where's the parent? Somebody just needs to go get the parent and be like, look, we're going to have a community discussion, and you need to sit your butt down right now. The student, believed to be 17 or 18, joined a female rowing team at a private club in Massachusetts in 2021 after allegedly doing poorly on the male team. Bring! Hello? Oh, hi. Will Thomas? Leah, it's great to hear your voice. Sound familiar? Right? The transgender athlete's participation allegedly caused issues for her fellow rowers. Whatever would that be? According to a copy of a letter sent to U.S. Rowing, the sport's national governing body, signed by 15 concerned parents. Oh, parents are showing up now. That's good to know. One of the parents told the magazine that the athlete in question didn't bother to shave her stubble. What? Why are we playing the game? It's a dude. I don't care if it hurts his feelings. It's his stubble. The final straw was an even continued wearing the male team's uniform. Probably gave a little bit more room for comfort. Wasn't like a binder, right? One of those things.
Can we stop testing for testosterone and search for a tallywhacker?
Can we, if you've got an apple, you got a banana, right? Let's go. Final straw was an incident in 2022 when the tranny rower allegedly walked into the girls' changing room, observed a teammate who was topless, and said, ooh, I'm not going to say the word. In reference to her breasts, when another rower in the locker room asked if this was the first time her transgender teammate had seen female breasts, she reportedly replied, yeah, with a laugh. Who needs a shower, right? I'm going to advocate soap and water for everyone. The Kipp Academy student was subsequently reported to the U.S. Center for Safe Sport, resulting in her suspension from the team. Bada bing, bada boom, let's go. What are we doing? Does it take a woman being ogled by a dude with stubble who wants to be called she, her? Can we just tap the brakes? There's nothing that involves progress with the word progressive. It is regressive. It is insane and woof. Okay? That's the word of the day. Woof. W-O-O-F. Period. When we come back. This is one of those that gets me going. You ready? My juices? All right. How do you dumb down the next generation? You stop expecting and offering avenues for excellence. How Black Lives Matter has shut down a school district's gifted program because it's too white. Next on the Wendy Bell Radio Program. I think it goes without saying in our household that we are big advocates of higher education. I will also admit to you that my philosophy on that has been shaken in recent years, if for no other reason than watching my sons go through the process of applying to college. So much sanity in our country has been co-opted and corrupted. And we have been presented a new normal that I personally reject. And it is that rejection of this progress, if you will, that oftentimes fuels my ire that you get on the show. Because I'm not okay with policies that suck. I'm not okay with unraveling the importance of family. I'm not okay with the emasculation of men. I'm not okay with the demonizing of white people. And I'm not okay with championing carte blanche everyone who's not white. But I do believe that we are all entitled to, and when you live in the greatest place on planet Earth, you ought to demand the best education that there is. And of course, that's not what we get. And there is a reason why Democrats vote unanimously against measures that would afford parents the choice to take their children and to educate them according to their preference and not their zip code. You ought not be hamstrung into a failing and or underfunded school because Democrats just want your kids to get money so that every child in the seat is cash and every child in the seat in a public school is an opportunity for indoctrination or grooming or otherwise. That is a generalization. I believe parents should be able to educate their children the way they see fit. That is contrary to the Democrat way. Reason 7052, I'm not a Democrat. But when madness affects all children, I'm done. And this is one of those stories. So one of my colleagues, his name is Jason Rance. And he is a radio guy who does conservative talk on KTTH 770. He also writes a lot of really great articles. And this one I found on mynorthwest.com. And it shows you the obvious decline in expectations of excellence in our children in school. School district takes next step in ditching Seattle gifted program. Listen to this. Privileged progressives donning their white knight armor, yes, are in the next phase of a plan to end Seattle Public Schools' gifted students program, known locally as its Highly Capable Cohort, HCC. That is what this gifted program is called. They complained that the HCC was too white. HCC separates academically gifted children from others via different classrooms or entirely different schools. But in 2020, when Seattle school board directors voted to terminate the gifted program over the objections of parents, HCC, we now know, will be completely phased out by the 2027-2028 school year. Too white. Outraged more by the success of white and Asian students than by the untapped potential of Black and Hispanic pupils, progressives would rather drag achievers down than elevate everyone. Yes, these self-proclaimed saviors boast on social media about tackling inequities, oblivious to the harm that they inflict. Yes. Indeed, the program to replace this gifted program and be implemented in every classroom ensures that gifted students will be unchallenged, that struggling students will escape the attention they deserve, and that teachers will be overwhelmed. In other words, everyone will be equitably harmed. Yes. Critics argued that the students in the HCC did not reflect the diversity of the community. Isn't that rich? So rather than talk about maybe lapses or the root problems of the disparity, they just will take away the upper echelon offerings, the upper echelon offerings for everybody, and just call it a day. It's the easy way out. It's the lazy man's way. It's the suck progressive way of making things equitable. Ladies and gentlemen, we're well past socialism. This is full on communism. Here. Critics argued that it didn't reflect diversity. The move was prompted by Black Lives Matter activism. Of course it was. In 2018, 3 years after Seattle Public Schools hired an equity specialist to address so-called racial inequities, the students that this gifted program served, 13% multiracial, 11.8% Asian, 3.7% Hispanic, and 1.6% Black. By 2023, the numbers had changed. Critics argued that's because the HCC didn't match the district's diversity. The program was irredeemably racist and needed to be dismantled. But parents, including those who are Black, Asian, and Hispanic, argued against closing the program down. They argued that the schools should work harder to identify minority students who are eligible for the gifted program rather than kill the program altogether. That involves people working. That involves people thinking outside the box. That involves people who are hired primarily to check boxes to prove that they're not just box checkers. But what happens when you find out that that's all they are? One father pleaded that the Seattle School Board consider the disservice you would be doing the minorities who are already in the gifted program. He argued the program does more for Black children, particularly Black boys, than it does for their peers. But the extremist Seattle School Board was unmoved. Then Director Chandra Hampson argued Black parents supporting the HCC, the gifted program, as being tokenized by white Seattle parents. How racist is that? How different is this than the gentleman in Nebraska, who's a Democrat, switching parties because he's pro-life, because he's staunchly Catholic, and the sanctity of protecting that life is not negotiable to him? The Democrat Party said, screw off. Beat it. We censure you. You get none of our money. You are dead to us. Oh, how diverse. How inclusive. It's the same thing here with overt racism. Black parents saying, hey, wait a minute. Our students like this too. Our students are gifted. Why can't you're being tokenized by white Seattle parents? You can't make your own decisions. You've been impacted. You token Uncle Tom. Now, the article goes into this. So, okay, so you're going to scrap this gifted program. What are you going to do instead? Damn well better be fantastic. Well, of course not. It's apparently the whole classroom model which is going to replace this gifted thing. It's going to be implemented in each classroom starting next year. I'm sure it's fantastic. No, it's unworkable. Under the model, this is what the students in Seattle are going to get, thanks to these white, liberal, savior complex people. I'm going to take a sip here real fast and cough. I beg your pardon. Under the model, classrooms will include students of all different learning abilities. A teacher is supposed to address each group of students in classrooms with 20 to 30 kids. With no additional resources and limited new training. How on earth does a teacher create individualized programs for so many students with disparate needs? Well, they can't. It's not likely that a teacher can help a student who can barely read while simultaneously challenging a classmate who's reading two advanced books a week. A recent Seattle Times feature offered a look at the typical day in one of these programs using View Ridge Elementary as an example, and it was hardly impressive. This is what they found. On a recent day in a first grade classroom, seven advanced learners sat on the floor reading silently on their iPads. Several others wrote independently at their desks. A special education student wrote with a paraprofessional aide at their side. And the rest of the class sat in a front corner of the classroom while the teacher read a book out loud. This is the plan. This is the strategy. It's not about outside the box thinking. It's not about extraordinary ideas. It's not about tapping into that individual brain that just needs cultivation to bloom. It's about boiling everything down to the lowest common denominator that involves the least amount of work, that when the results predictably, demonstrably, obviously will suck, can then point fingers and blame people elsewhere. It is the Democrat way. It is the progressive way. It is an oxymoron. There is nothing that moves us forward. There is nothing that advances us, that is beneficial to us, that comes from progressives and Black Lives Matter rather than championing and cultivating Black lives, cashed in on a movement. A few people got rich, they ditched their hands of it, and now they work to bring everybody else down to their level. Is that progress or is that insanity? When we come back on the Wendy Bell Radio program, I got to talk to you about this, ladies and gentlemen, because it's going to... The dollars and cents of voting Democrat with American oil, filling up the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Might want to do that soon. Oh, no. No, we're not going to do that, says the Biden administration. Wait for the why after this. Professionally, I think one of the cooler things that I have done, aside from having Donald Trump himself call into this radio program, was to be able to, during his presidency, in a short amount of time, because I'd only done radio for like a year, maybe. And we were able to get, I think it was 9 of the 12 or so cabinet members in Donald Trump's administration on the program. And it was wonderful to talk to all sorts of different kinds of people. And one of the conversations I had that I enjoyed the most came from a gentleman named Dan Brouillette, and he was the Secretary of Energy, and he just a fascinating guy. He and his wife, I think, had 11 children. Like, he and his wife were both professionals, military, like this whole pedigree. And you're like, my God, how did you do this? This is great. But we talked a lot about energy, about the stockpiles, about all the places where our petroleum, our oil is stored in the Gulf. And there was this push with gas prices down to historic lows, and it's undeniable. There was this push by Donald Trump to not only tap out the Strategic Petroleum Reserve so that they were at 100% capacity. And this is ostensibly for times of war, for natural disaster, for Joe Biden to drain and sell to other countries, to create the illusion that the deficit didn't suck under him, even though it did, right? But there was this push, and Donald Trump had suggested this. Dan Brouillette, the Secretary of Energy at the time, told us during his presidency that there had been a conversation about getting all of these tanker ships and strategically placing them in various locations around the globe, And loading them down with oil. So not only are your reserves at max capacity, you've got these other places when the price is so low, this is the greatest time to stockpile. Of course, Congress said no to that because that would have made too much sense in terms of basic economic supply and demand and to prepare ourselves, right? So now we've got this, we're flirting at dangerous lows of the SPR because Joe Biden has decided to sell it for all sorts of a variety of things and then go grovel to Saudi Arabia and fist bump them, right? And try to get more oil from them. We've got it right here under our feet, ladies and gentlemen. So there's a plan, there's been talk, and this is on townhall.com, but everybody's pretty well talking about it. Talk to Phil, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, so we can get back to the area where we have a little bit of breathing room. You can't steal from, you know, future generations' wealth forever and not replenish the coffers. So now would be a great time. Oh, that's right. It's too expensive under Joe Biden to fill the coffers of oil because everything these people do sucks. I'm going to give you a couple paragraphs of this, and then I want you to hear Karine Jean-Pierre, a woeful box-checking dipstick who couldn't explain anything economic if she tried. Story. The Biden administration announced Wednesday that, at least for now, it's abandoning plans to refill the Strategic Petroleum Reserve after Joe Biden drained the emergency supply to its lowest level since the 1980s in a transparently political move to artificially push gas prices down. In a realization that Americans have been making regularly since Biden and his failed Build Back Better turned Bidenomics agenda came to power, the White House has seemingly realized prices are just too darn high to fill the government's emergency supply. Well, no, duh. How do you think we feel, you schmucks? In its report on the Biden administration's decision, Bloomberg quoted the U.S. Department of Energy as saying the plans to refill the SPR were abandoned because it was, quote, keeping the taxpayers' interest at the forefront, which would be a first for the Biden administration. Biden and his band of climate alarmists had planned to purchase as many as 3 million barrels of oil for a strategic petroleum reserve site in Louisiana, slated for delivery later this summer, but oh no, too expensive. Oopsies. Well, Peter Ducey asked this of Karine Jean-Pierre. This is what you get. These are the real morons in this administration. Go.
Goodness.
Okay. Thank you. First, the you guys started draining the Strategic Petroleum Reserve to try and help with the Putin price hike a few years ago. Said you were going to refill it, but now it doesn't seem like that's happening. Why?
Well, from I believe the Department of Energy is responsible for
that's how
that,
it goes.
Particular component is refilling that. So I would refer you to the Department of Energy. I know there are certain components to that, and how they were going to move forward in refilling it. They would have more specifics on that for you.
She's okay. Got nothing. It's one of the most important aspects of protecting us for the future. It's one of those rainy day funds, one of those places you need to go in the event that, I don't know, the whole world wants to take you out. Maybe a little buffer zone would be good. Yeah, well, I think that's something probably you're going to have to talk to the Department of Energy about. No, duh. Shouldn't you know, Karine? America's energy situation rumbled off the rails on day one of this administration as Joe Biden started to implement his campaign pledge to end fossil fuels in the United States by forcing a green, which is not green at all, it's called money laundering 101 when war runs out, energy transition, and American consumers be damned. So our energy independence. Poof, low prices at the pump. Poof, and then every single thing that you have on your body, in your home, in your car, that you see in a restaurant or in a place of business that comes from petroleum, why, all of it costs more money because on day one, these people went to war against us. Bing, 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 bing. That would be correct. Thank you for being part of the Wendy Bell Radio program, you guys. Love having you. Get the podcast, Wendy Bell Radio, wherever you get your favorite listening materials. And until we see you tomorrow, thanks for being here. Peace.